Hello and welcome to the Old Time Radio Hour. I'm your host, Justine Ward, and each week we bring you a classic show from radio's golden age. It's that time again when we let your imagination treat you to thrills and chills for the Halloween season. Mystery and horror were popular year-round on old radio, and no wonder, because your imagination provides the best special effects. This week we have two episodes of suspense, the long-running, high-quality mystery theater of radio. We start with Too Little to Live On, starring a favorite sitcom couple, Ozzie and Harriet, in a rare dramatic appearance. They won't be able to laugh this problem away. It will keep you in suspense. Too Little to Live On, starring Ozzie Nelson and Harriet Hilliard, first broadcast December 26, 1947 on CBS.
Suspense. Produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, presents the last of a special series of Friday night performances at this hour. Tonight from Hollywood, we bring you a most unusual broadcast, starring a famous radio couple who have never before appeared in a story of this kind. Mr. Ozzie Nelson and Miss Harriet Hilliard. You are accustomed to hearing our stars in their own comedy show. But tonight, Ozzie and Harriet appear for us as a couple who are driven to the plotting of murder in Too Little to Live On by Robert Richards, a play well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I tell you, it doesn't matter now. How do you think anything could matter anymore to me now? You should have let me die. That was the best way. That's all that matters to me now is that I want to die. That's all I care about, being dead. I don't know whether we ever thought about it before this morning or not. It might have crossed our minds sometime, one or the other of us, I don't know. But we never talked about it, never. Never before this morning. And then this morning, everything just seemed to come to a head. Every little thing that had happened all those months and years just seemed to pile up at once. It just seemed as though this morning was the last straw.
Hi, honey.
Hello, darling. Your breakfast is there keeping warm on the back of the stove. I'd get it for you, but I'm already late with his.
That's right.
You better hurry, though.
I'm not going to the office today.
You're not?
He wants me to stick around. His lawyer's coming over sometime today.
His lawyer?
Yeah, don't you remember?
I guess I forgot.
Yeah, his lawyer's coming over, so I have to stick around the house all day.
Couldn't you go over to the office and come back?
No, that's not the way he wants it. He says the lawyer's coming, but he doesn't know when. At least that's his story.
Well, maybe he really doesn't know.
Oh, he knows all right. Not that it matters much. I don't have any appointments today anyway. People around here wouldn't have their teeth fixed if you paid them to.
Well, they can't help it if they're poor, Dave.
I didn't say they could. I just said they can't afford to go to the dentist. I'm the dentist they can't afford to go to.
I know. Oh, darling, if we could only move to another neighborhood, then at least you could start building a decent practice.
Sure, how? With what?
I know.
With Uncle Ed's money when we get it. At least that's what we've been telling ourselves for the last 3 years.
But couldn't we talk to him? Couldn't we make him see
it? He likes to see us have it tough. Likes to have us dependent on that money. That's all he lives for, and he'll probably live to be 100.
Well, we've just got to be patient, Dave. Oh, there he is. He's up. I've got to hurry.
I think at least he'd spend enough dough to have some decent tires put on that wheelchair of his so it wouldn't bump around over our heads like a 10-ton truck day and night.
Well, I suppose we ought to be thankful he doesn't spend his money. In a way.
Have you seen him this morning?
Uh-huh.
How's he feeling?
About the same, I guess. He made me bring his lemon juice and water down and heat it up again. Said it wasn't hot enough. Willie almost bit me again.
Yeah, that mutt.
Well, dog's getting old. I suppose he can't help it. Any more than Uncle Ed.
They could both help it. He wants it that way. He gets a kick out of it. Now it's got so we even have to kowtow to a snarling little mutt. He sits there and laughs.
We've just got to be patient, Dave.
One thing, when we get that $30,000, we sure will have earned it.
Dave.
Yeah?
What about the lawyer?
What about it?
I mean, what do you suppose it means?
What should it mean? He's always getting that guy over here every 3 or 4 months and going into some kind of a huddle.
But why should he want you here?
He probably needs us both as witnesses to something.
You know, he's been talking an awful lot lately about that orphanage over in Brooklyn.
Sure, and last winter all he could talk about was some foundling home for stray dogs down in Pennsylvania. He's just cracking the whip, that's all, to see us jump.
Oh, Dave, if he was to change his will now after all we've been through...
Oh, don't worry, he won't.
Oh, there he goes. He's something for his breakfast. Coming right up, Uncle Ed. Let's see. I hope his eggs are right. Get the coffee off the back of the stove, darling, while I get a cup.
Okay. Take it easy. It's all right, honey. It's only a cup.
I know. Sometimes it makes me so nervous, I feel as though I'm going crazy.
Take it easy, dear. Here, let me get this ready.
No, I'm all right now. There's a pan of milk warming on the stove. Fill this bowl about half full and break up a handful of those little dog biscuits in it.
Okay.
Sugar, salt, pepper, cream. All right, come on. Open the door for me, will you, darling?
Here, I'll carry the tray.
No, he likes to have me bring it.
What's the difference?
Oh, don't ask me, Dave. Oh, the paper for him. Oh, you've got it.
Well, I haven't read the paper yet myself.
Shh. You can read it later. Come on. Here's your breakfast, Uncle Ed.
All right.
I'm sorry I was a little late.
Well, set it down. I heard what you said about the paper, David. If it's getting so you even begrudge a little thing like that to a helpless invalid...
No, I don't begrudge it, Uncle Ed. Here's your paper.
So important for you to read the paper, why don't you subscribe for two of them?
I'm afraid the budget in this family won't stand for little luxuries like that.
Ah, when I was your age, I had my first $1,000 in the bank.
Well, things were a little different in those days, Uncle Ed.
I was a little different. That's what the difference was. All right, set Willie's breakfast down for him, Myra. No, not there. Over by his bed where he can get at it.
Yes, Uncle Ed. I'm afraid Willie doesn't like me anymore.
Here, I'll give it to him.
Hey, stop that! Don't you dare strike that dog, David!
I wasn't going to hit him. I just want him to let go of my sleeve.
Poor Willie. Oh. Well, if Meyer would take him out once in a while, he wouldn't feel that way.
I take him out any time you ask me to, Uncle.
I forget sometimes. You want to do it without my asking. Well, you can go now. I know you don't want to stay any longer than you have to. Oh, Myra, hand me my glasses on the bureau.
Glasses? Yes, Uncle Ed. Here.
Oh, what, Myra, you fool!
Oh, Uncle Ed, I'm so sorry. Maybe I can mend them.
Of course you can't mend them. They're broken, you idiot.
Don't talk to her like that.
What's that?
I said don't talk to her like that.
Dave, please.
Oh, I see. Now you're trying to bully me. A helpless old man in a wheelchair. Well, I won't stand for it.
Uncle Ed, he didn't mean anything.
I made my bargain with you, David, and I intend to keep it, as long as you do. And I've never complained about the care you've given me, although heaven knows it's been little enough. But don't think for a minute I'll stand for anything like this.
I'm sorry, Uncle Ed.
I'm afraid that's scarcely enough.
Well, it won't happen again. Look, I'll get the glasses fixed. I know a guy that can do it right away.
Probably take a week, and in the meantime, I'll be as blind as a bat. And don't expect me to pay for it.
No, don't worry. I'll pay for it. You'll have him back tonight.
Mm. Oh, this reminds me, David. Be sure that you're here when my lawyer comes today.
I'll be here. That's why I stayed home from the office.
Well, that's all for now. Oh, and I suppose neither of you's taken the trouble lately to find out which of my prescriptions need refilling.
Oh, yeah, I was thinking of that yesterday.
Oh, were you? Well, let's do it now. Bismuth's entirely gone. Look, entirely gone. You better get another bottle of iron tonic. Let's see, the drops. Yeah, that's all right for now. And the thiocyanate. You better get that refilled, too, while you're at it. Take the bottle and the bismuth, too.
I'll go right away, Uncle Ed.
Yes, you do, and you come right back. You know that I must have my bismuth not later than 20 minutes after each meal.
Yes, I know. Come on, Myra. I hate myself. Oh, take it easy, dear. It's all right. It's all right now.
Oh, Dave, I've died. I've tried, but I can't go on like this.
Oh, take it easy, honey. It won't be much longer.
Oh, we've been saying that for 3 years. We're like prisoners. We can't go out of the house together because somebody has to be with him. We can't have friends in because they disturb him. Oh, Dave, we can't even have a baby.
I could kill him. Sometimes I could kill him.
Dave, don't.
I mean it. When I see what he's doing to you, when I see him making a slave out of you, making a nervous wreck out of you so you can't even call your soul your own.
No, no, Dave, please. Please, I'm all right now.
Sure, we made a bargain, like he said. But not this kind of a bargain.
Oh, darling, I know it's just as bad for you as it is for me. It's just that I'm here alone with him all day. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have let myself go that way.
Oh, I hate myself, Myra. If I'd known I was going to be like this.
It's not your fault, darling. I knew what we were doing.
I'm not even a man anymore. I let him sit there and say things to my wife that a man wouldn't take from anybody on earth, but I take it. I take it and smile.
Oh, Dave, Dave, it's not your fault.
Oh, it is my fault. If I was any kind of a man, I'd do something about it.
Well, there's nothing to do, don't you see? I should never have acted like this. We've just got to be patient and wait, that's all.
Wait. Maybe another 3 years, maybe 10 more years.
Oh, honey.
Oh, what's the use of kidding ourselves? How do we know how long it's going to take him to die? Sometimes I don't even think he's sick. Sometimes I think he's just putting it on to make us wait on him.
But the doctor says...
He could fool the doctors. It's been done. Even when he does die, how can we ever be sure?
Dave, you don't...
I think he's just that mean, yes. Snatch the money away at the last minute and die laughing at us.
But he said it was a bargain. He said he
You
promised.
Think promises mean anything to him?
Well, could he do it without... I mean, with...
Do what?
Change his will?
Well, sure he could do it anytime he wanted to.
Without even telling us?
Nothing that says he has to tell us anything.
Oh, Dave, the lawyer.
Yeah, I know.
Today. Why does he have to come today of all days? After I broke his glasses and you hollered at him?
Yeah, I know.
Could he do it just like that today?
Sure. He could do it today, he could do it any time. We'd never know until he told us.
Oh, he wouldn't. He couldn't.
Why not? He might just as well do it anyway. He'll hold it over us in the last minute like he did just now. So we probably die of heart failure before he does.
But you said just a few minutes ago...
I know. I've been kidding myself for 3 years, but not anymore.
Well, Dave, what are we going to do? What can we do?
I don't know, Myra. I don't know. Yet?
If only something could happen.
Like what? Nothing's going to happen, Myra. Unless we make it happen.
Dave, we couldn't...
Well, we can't go on like this either.
We can tell him to
go. And throw away 3 years of our lives? The 3 years we've rotted in this dump? We've earned that money. $10,000 a year isn't half enough for what we've gone
through. Dave, I don't care about
well,
the money.
Well, I do. Anybody but him, I'd feel different. I don't have any more feeling about him than I do that dog up there.
Dave, you don't really mean...
I don't know what I mean. Listen, I've got to go over to the drugstore and get his medicine.
All right. Hurry back.
I'll only be a minute. It's just across the street.
Dave.
Yeah?
What about the lawyer?
What about him?
What if he should come now?
Yeah, well, keep an eye out for him.
But what if he comes?
I don't know. I've got to think. Stall him off. Tell him something.
What should I tell him?
Tell him the old man's sick. He can't see him.
Sick?
Yeah, sick.
All right, Dave. Oh, Dave, have you got his glasses?
Yeah, I'll give them to Mr. Herman at the drugstore. He knows an oculist right here in the neighborhood. He wouldn't mind sending them over.
All right, hurry.
Well, good morning, Dr. O'Connor.
Oh, good morning, Clancy.
Taking the day off today?
Yeah, that's right. Take him easy.
Say, how's the old gentleman this morning?
Oh, he's all right.
Well, I'm glad to hear it, He's a fine old man.
Hello, Mr. Herman.
Well, Dr. O'Connor, you come for your regular batch of medicines, I suppose.
Yeah, that's right.
How is Mr. O'Connor? Better, I hope.
Well, I'm afraid he's been having a little pain lately.
Oh, that's too bad. He's such a courageous old man, so
yes.
Cheerful.
Yes.
Every time I go by and he's sitting up there by his window, he waves. Always he sends his little remembrance at Christmas. Yes, your uncle is a real gentleman.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, what will it be today?
Oh, the iron tonic, bismuth, 100 tablets, and refill the thiocyanate prescription. Here, I brought the bottle.
All right, I'll get it for you right away. You got a prescription for the thiocyanate, a new one?
No, but I'll sign it.
Oh, sure, that's right, you can sign it. You know how it is, Doctor, we got to be careful of these things.
You better give me the big tablets this time.
Sure thing. You reach just over the counter there, you'll find the prescription blank. Just below there. You got it?
Oh, yeah, thanks.
There we are.
But don't bother, Rabbit.
All right, let's see, that's 487.
487, here. I got it even. Oh, and say, Mr. Hammond, I wonder if you could do me a little favor.
Why, surely anything, Doctor.
My uncle broke his glasses this morning.
Oh, say, that's too bad.
Yeah, he's almost helpless without them.
Yes, that's right. I know he is.
Yeah, I wonder if you could send him around to a good oculist in the neighborhood.
Why, sure I could. No trouble at all.
I could go myself, but... Well, he's not feeling too well this morning, and I ought to get right back. Whatever the bill is, you know I'm good for it.
Don't you worry about that. Why, sure, I'll do that right away for you, Dr. O'Connor.
Yeah, well, thanks.
Thank you, Dr. O'Connor.
Give the old gentleman my best, Doctor.
Sure, I will.
Dave?
Yeah, did the lawyer come?
No, did you get the glasses, Dave?
Yeah, I gave them to Mr. Herman. Come on in the kitchen. Medicine, Myra.
Oh.
Myra, do you know what these things are that he's been taking?
No, not exactly.
Well, this is bismuth. The stuff he takes after each meal. 3 or 4 of them. The stuff he's due to take right now.
Dave.
Now, wait a minute. These are thiocyanate. He only takes these once in a while for his heart. Just one of them. Less that one because I got bigger tablets this time.
Dave, what are you trying to say?
I'm trying to say... If he took 3 or 4 of these instead of his bismuth, by mistake, it would kill him.
Dave, no.
By mistake, I said.
It couldn't be.
Yes, it could. Look at the tablets. Can you tell them apart?
Hardly.
If they were in the wrong bottle.
But afterwards, they know if they're in the wrong bottle, they'd know that somebody
No, he'd think it was all right from the shape. But afterwards, we'd put him back in the right bottle.
Well, then they'd know it couldn't be a mistake. They'd know he could read right on the bottle from the label.
No, they wouldn't. They'd know he couldn't read the label. They'd know he couldn't read anything.
His glasses.
That's right, his glasses. And the oculist would have to swear to it.
Dave, are you sure... Are you sure he can't see?
He's blind as a bat without him. That much I know is real.
Oh, Dave.
Don't you see? It's the only way, Myra. It's a chance of a lifetime. No tampering with anything. No changing labels so they could analyze glue if they got suspicious. None of that.
I know, but...
And don't forget his lawyer's coming today.
Well, couldn't we just tell him to go?
What about the money?
Oh, Dave, I can't think. The front door.
That must be the lawyer now. Yeah, it is. I can see him standing outside.
What should we do?
Get rid of him.
Well, hurry before he rings again. He might hear us.
Will I tell him?
Well, what you told me to tell him, that... He's had a bad turn. We're calling the doctor. And then if he asks any questions any time, we could say it was...
Yeah. All right. Good morning, Mr. Eldridge.
Well, how do you do, Dr. O'Connor?
I'm sorry you had to come way out here, but my uncle has had sort of a bad turn.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Nothing serious.
No, we're calling the doctor. I don't think it's anything serious, Mr. Eldridge. I don't see how it could be.
Why, no.
But he was wondering if you could come back some other day.
Oh, I see. Well, it's just a matter of his signature on a document.
Yeah, well, I'm really afraid he isn't up to it, Mr. Eldridge.
I see. Well, perhaps I could phone him later in the day.
Could
I could phone him. There'd be no objection to that, would there?
No. But if there's any message, I could give it to him later.
Yes, well, you might say that I've made the changes that he requested. He'll know what I mean.
All right, I'll do that, and thank you, Mr. Eldridge.
Thank you, Doctor. Good day, sir.
Goodbye.
Has he gone?
Yeah.
Did he...
No, it was all right.
What is it, Dave? Did he say anything?
Oh, he said that he made the changes, whatever they were, and that he'd understand. He said that all he wanted was his signature on some document.
His will?
He didn't say that.
Oh.
Now or never, Myra.
Oh, Dave, let me just think. Just for a minute.
Come on, what about it?
Yes. All right.
All right. So here are the two bottles. Come on now.
Oh, Dave, no.
You've got to come.
Why?
Because you have.
All right.
You don't have to say anything.
All right.
Did I hear someone at the front door?
No, there hasn't been anyone here. Has there, Myra?
No.
Oh, I thought it might have been Mr. Eldridge.
Here, I got your medicine.
Well, you took long enough about it.
I'll put it over here by the bed where you can get it.
Well, what do you want, Myra?
I just came to get your tray. Didn't Willie like his breakfast?
Oh, it was too hot, of course. I'm going to give it to him now.
Have you got water for your pills?
Yes. What about my glasses?
Oh, they'll be ready this evening.
Oh, all right. You show Mr. Eldridge up here the minute he arrives.
Yes, I will, Uncle Ed. Yes. Want me to take the tray?
No. I've got it. Oh, Dave, how could we?
What's the use of that? It's done now.
It's horrible. Don't you realize that it's...
Murder? All right, it is, and I'm glad.
Dave, don't say that.
What's the difference what you call it? It was the only thing to do. It's even better for him this way.
David, I'm afraid.
There's nothing to be afraid of.
Listen.
Yeah. He's wheeled himself over to take his pills.
Dave, does it... Will it take long?
At his age, and if his heart is anything like what the doctor says it is, no.
Is it...
Painful? No. Like a heart attack, that's all.
What was that?
He must have fallen.
Then he...
Yeah. A minute anyway.
We ought to go up.
No, wait a minute.
But the bottles...
There's plenty of time.
Shouldn't you wear gloves or something?
No, I thought it would look funnier if there weren't any fingerprints.
David, we ought to go up, even if... I mean, it would look better.
All right.
We'll have to call the doctor.
We'll have to anyway, either way.
I suppose.
Don't worry, it won't be like that.
The wheelchair's empty.
He's not here. Quick, look in the closet.
No. Under the bed. Dave. Look, Willie.
He's dead. The dog is dead, Myra.
But how?
There's a note on the chair. Oh.
What? Dave, what is it?
It's from him. It says, my dear, dear niece and nephew, the thing has at last occurred which I have always known would someday inevitably occur. Poor little Willie has given his life to save mine.
Oh.
It may interest you to know that from my window I saw Mr. Eldridge leaving the house. I also suspect that the incident of breaking my glasses was not quite an accident. And so, my dear children, I have gone to the police. And the little bottles with their transposed contents are in my pocket, as final and conclusive evidence of your murderous intent. Fortunately, I have never been quite as helpless as I allowed you to believe, and have in fact conserved my strength for precisely such an emergency, a circumstance to which it now appears I owe my life. For your further information, Mr. Eldridge was not coming to change my will.
Okay.
Now my would-be heirs and assigns, a fond farewell. I will see you in court. Your loving Uncle Ed. P.S. Did you hear my body fall? I thought you would like that. I did.
How could he have gotten out?
Oh, down the front stairs while we were...
You said he couldn't read the label.
He didn't. Tried it on the dog.
What can they do?
Attempted murder. 20 years to life.
But would they believe...
They'd believe what everybody else believes. A fine old gentleman.
Why?
There it is.
David.
Yes.
Are there any more?
What?
The pills?
Myra.
There isn't anything else to do, is there, David?
No. I guess not.
Are there more? Enough?
Yes, of the little ones in my pocket.
These?
Yeah.
How many?
Oh, half a dozen.
You said it didn't hurt.
No, not much.
Oh, David, I did so want to have children. The door.
Look out the window. See who it is.
Oh, Dave, I'm afraid.
What's there to be afraid of now?
Couldn't we go away somewhere, some other country?
With what? It's probably the police now.
David, here.
You'd better go down and tell them something, anything, just so they'll leave us alone. Give us some time.
Yes, all right.
Myra.
Yes?
Goodbye, darling.
No, wait.
Go on.
Goodbye. Yes, officer?
Good evening, Mrs. O'Connor. I'm sorry, but...
Yes, Clancy, I know.
I'm afraid you don't, ma'am. I've got some bad news for you, Mrs. O'Connor, about your uncle.
Yes, Clancy, yes.
I don't know how he could have got out there, but he was just hit by a car.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am. He's dead.
Dead?
Yes.
Dead. That's all. I tried, but they stopped me. David had died before I got there. That's all. I just wanted to have children. I wish I was dead.
Suspense. Produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Tonight you heard Ozzie Nelson and Harriet Hilliard as stars of Too Little to Live On. Now Mr. Spear joins our stars at the microphone.
Ozzie and Harriet, may I tell you sincerely that you are great.
Well, thank you indeed, Bill. You really mean it?
I certainly do.
Well, thanks. It's been a real experience to do a show of this kind, Bill. I don't know about Ozzy there, but I never plotted a murder before.
And we had such a fine accomplice in the control booth, too.
I'm blushing attractively. Incidentally, I'm told that you inherit this broadcast time next week.
Yeah, that's right, Bill. Next Friday night at the same time, Harriet and I will be acting like ourselves again in our own show, The Adventures of Ozzy, that's me, and Harriet, that's her. This is our last Sunday coming up.
Uh-huh.
How about suspense, Bill? You're changing time, too, aren't you?
We are, and we have some pretty exciting things planned. Beginning a week from tomorrow, that's Saturday, January 3rd, Suspense will be broadcast as a full-hour series every Saturday from 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Time.
Oh, full hour. That's wonderful.
Tell more.
Well, with us every Saturday during the series, as the man who'll lay down the welcome mat and play host to our listeners, will be a very, very distinguished star. I'm very happy and very honored to have him with us. I'll give you another hint. He's an actor-director.
I guess you're going to make us wait for his name, huh?
Just creating suspense, Harriet. The gentleman's name is Mr. Robert Montgomery.
Oh, that's really something.
Oh, Bob is great, Bill. Ought to be a wonderful series. Well, shall we wish each other some kind of good luck or something?
Fine. I'm sure you've had a Merry Christmas, so let's put in a plug for a Happy New Year to you, and a Happy Friday from now on, too.
And a Happy Saturday to you, Bill.
Ozzie and Harriet appeared through the courtesy of International Silver Company, creators of International Sterling and 1847 Rogers Brothers Silver Plate. Tonight's suspense play, Too Little to Live On, was written by Robert Richards. Appearing in it were Joseph Kearns, who played Uncle Ed, Wally Mayer, Frank Albertson, and Jerry Hausner. Music composed by Lucian Morawek was conducted by Lud Gluskin. Next week at the same time, listen to the adventures of Ozzie and Harriet.
Next Saturday night at 8 o'clock Eastern Time, listen to Mr. Robert Montgomery in Suspense. CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You are listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web, with your host, Justine Ward. Next, we have a strange tale about a ventriloquist and his dummy, and an agent who wants to book the act. It's well written, and you'll enjoy the strange characters you meet at the carnival. This is Suspense, Flesh Peddler, first broadcast August 4th, 1957 on CBS.
Suspense. And the producer of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, the master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson.
One of the greatest pleasures we find in this business of keeping you in suspense is the discovery of new talent and of unusual story twists. In what you're about to hear, we think we have combined both. The twist, you'll never guess it, no matter how familiar you are with that mystical literary device, the ventriloquist dummy. And the new talent? Two young men. Bob Journ, whose first radio play this is, and DeForest Kelly, a bright new luminary in the Hollywood firmament who is presently being seen as Morgan Earp in Gunfight at OK Corral. Put them all together, and you have a strange half hour ahead. Listen. Listen then as DeForest Kelly stars in Flesh Peddler, which begins in exactly 1 minute.
Smoke Kent, smoke Kent with the micronite filter. It is the mild, mild cigarette. It's got the freshest, cleanest taste yet. It is the mild Kent cigarette. Smoke Kent with the micronite filter. It is the mild Kent cigarette. Smoke Kent with the micronite filter.
And now, Mr. DeForest Kelly in Flesh Peddler, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I'm an agent, a booking agent. Flesh peddlers, we are sometimes unkindly called. But I don't peddle flesh. I sell talent. Singers, musicians, nightclub acts. And I'm pretty good at it. I've got an instinct for talent. When I find a new act that's really got it, I go after it until it's mine. Only the ventriloquist team of Wilson and Oliver, I wish I'd never heard of them. Then I could sleep better nights. My wife and I were vacationing in the Catskills last summer, and the night before we were due back in New York, a carnival pulled into town. I don't want to sound like a snob, but to me, the carnival is the lowest form of show business. I hate them. But my wife, Gloria, loves them. Since I love Gloria, we went to the carnival.
Pete, isn't it exciting?
It's just cheap noise.
Oh, I wish it had come to town sooner.
I wish it hadn't come till tomorrow.
Oh, come on, Pete. You might even find some new talent.
Here?
Why not?
Freaks are for sideshows, honey, not class spots.
You never can tell. A bearded lady might go great at the Coca.
Hey, I can tell.
Here, folks. Right here for the wonder of the Midway. Hey, the one and only Alexander Wilson and his lovable little dummy pal, Oliver. Hey, you've seen ventriloquists before, you say. Hey, but you've never seen anything to equal Wilson. The remarkable Wilson and Oliver. Hey, don't pass this by, friends.
Pete, let's go in.
Oh, ventriloquist, a dime a dozen.
Come on, I want to see him.
Honey, you've seen 100 just like him.
Well, maybe he's 1 in 100.
All right. We pushed through into the small tent and took our places on the hard, uncomfortable benches. Wilson was already seated on the platform, a typical childishly dressed dummy on his lap. He was a man in his 50s, I'd say, with the saddest face I've seen in 15 years of show business. When the people were in, he suddenly sprang the dummy to life.
Shut the doors. All prisoners accounted for, Mr. Wilson.
You're sure, Oliver?
Sure.
Well, then, say hello to the people.
Hello to the people.
Oh, now, come, Oliver. You can do better than that.
I can?
Yes.
Well, you ought to know.
The routine was awful. Dull, time-worn. But for some reason, this Wilson fascinated me. He had a talent, all right. His handling of the dummy was amazingly accurate. As the act went on, I began to think that Wilson was even better than the Barker said he was. And he was going over with the house. Wilson had Oliver sing while he himself smoked a cigarette. After a few more gag routines and a couple of neat tricks, the performance was over. And I knew I had to sign the act. I parked Glory on the merry-go-round and then went looking for Wilson. I walked back of the midway through the maze of painted trailers that were home to Kearney people. Suddenly the door to one of them flew open and a woman stepped out. A neatly trimmed beard covering her chin.
What do you want?
I'm looking for Alexander Wilson.
Wilson? Why?
I'm a talent agent from New York. I'd like to talk to him.
Agent?
Yes, Peter Harris, and you're...
Bernice, it's on the posters.
Oh, yes, of course, Bernice.
What do you want with Alexander Wilson?
I told you
Who is it, Bernice?
Talent agent. Never mind, go back in.
Agent?
I'm looking for Mr. Wilson.
Well, I'm Arthur. You caught my knife act. You know, I could pin a fly to a penny of 40 feet.
Quiet! Don't mind him, flesh peddler. Go away. Go home. Agents are no good for us. Leave Wilson alone.
And you know, like I could put out a candle flame with a penknife at 30 feet, Agent Man.
Arthur?
And...
Go back in.
Maybe he could sell my act.
Go in.
All right. Wilson's in trailer 17, Agent Man. Hey, if you ever need a
good... Shut up, Arthur. Shut up. Get in there. Forget what he said. Arthur is... Well, he isn't quite bright. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What's so wrong about seeing Wilson?
There are plenty of acts like his. You don't need him.
Well, you've got my curiosity going now, Bernice.
I hadn't intended that. But forget your curiosity. And go home. Now.
Why?
Believe me, flesh peddler, you will thank me for this advice someday.
Which is trailer 17? I couldn't see why Bernice was so huffy. It was none of her business anyway. I roamed through the trailers with my cigarette lighter held high, looking for number 17. Finally, I found it. A small aluminum antique set apart from the rest, with a pre-war Chevy attached to it. The trailer was completely dark. Mr. Wilson!
What is it?
I'm Peter Harris. I'd like to talk to you.
What do you want?
Well, I'm an agent, Mr. Wilson. I'd like to see you.
Just a minute.
Yes?
I just caught your act, Mr. Wilson. I enjoyed it very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to do business with you.
Do business?
Here's my card. My office places acts on all four networks and all the principal nightclubs.
I'm afraid it's out of the question. I never play nightclubs.
But...
Yes, I never play nightclubs, Mr. Harris.
Well, could I come in for a moment, explain my setup? Maybe when you...
No, forgive me for appearing short, but I'm not interested in any offer you have to make.
To begin with, I can get you $200 a week.
Oh, excuse me.
$250?
No, I'm very tired, if you'll pardon me.
Okay, Mr. Wilson, but will you tell me why you want to stay with a two-bit freak show when you could make a small fortune working with me?
No. No, I'm afraid I can't tell you. Good night.
I suppose I should have forgotten all about it, but I'm not used to the brush off. Like I say, when I see an act I want, I go after it until I get it. And then there was something about Wilson's reluctance that wasn't somehow on the level. As I walked back toward the bright lights and the noise of the midway, A figure stepped from behind one of the darkened trailers.
So you saw him?
Oh, Bernice. Yes, I saw him.
And are you satisfied?
Not at all.
Just more curious.
Exactly.
Only fools push their noses into other people's business, flesh peddler.
Harris is the name.
And only fools get themselves and other people into trouble.
Trouble? All I wanted was to offer him a nice fat job, $2.50 a week, and he slammed the door in my face.
Alexander Wilson cannot leave this carnival.
Why?
You don't know Mr. Harris, and you're not going to know.
Know what?
Stop asking foolish questions. Your curiosity can do a great deal of harm.
Bernice, where does the carnival go from here?
Really, Mr. Harris, you don't expect me to...
Look, I can ask any one of the barkers or setup men.
Ask them, then.
All right, I will.
But remember, flesh peddler, if you follow us to Poughkeepsie,
Poughkeepsie?
Very well, now you know. But if you follow us and try to see Wilson again, you are a fool.
In just a moment, we continue with Suspense.
Who says you can't have your cake and eat it? With our vast network facilities at your disposal, you can hop in the car and get away from it all and still not miss out on any of the exciting entertainment you've been enjoying regularly at home. The latest news, our daytime dramas, the music and comedy shows that fill each evening with joy are all available to you whether you're perched at the top of the highest mountain or are dangling a toe in the edge of the sea. The six dramatic shows that follow each other on CBS Radio every Sunday bring Broadway and Hollywood to you whether you're drifting downstream on a barge or flying high in a sports plane built for two. And the biggest variety shows can be enjoyed to the hilt on a pocket-sized transistor, as well as the huge console radio in a luxurious country hotel. Summer is a time for fun outdoors. Summer is a time for travel. With CBS Radio at your side, summer is a time for top-flight entertainment, no matter where you happen to be, no matter what else you happen to be doing.
And now, we continue with the second act of Flesh Peddler, starring Mr. DeForest Kelly. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Gloria and I drove back to Manhattan the next morning. And 2 days later, I hopped a Poughkeepsie local out of Grand Central. The more I thought about Wilson, the more of a challenge he became. I wanted him for my list, but more than that, I wanted to find out what was behind Bernice's strange attitude. Now I wish I'd forgotten about the whole thing. In Poughkeepsie, I checked into a hotel, took a cab to the carnival grounds at the edge of town. It was late afternoon as I pulled up in front of the gaudy tents and booths, waiting for the evening crowds. I made my way through the cluttered midway, looking for Wilson's aluminum trailer and hoping I wouldn't run into Bernice.
Hello. Agent man. Hey, agent man. Hello.
Hello.
Remember me? Arthur the knife thrower? I can pin a fly to a penny.
Yes, I remember you.
And you've come for me?
What's that?
You come all this way to get me for your agency?
Well, no, I'm afraid not.
Oh. Well, that's all right. I mean, you know, like, I've been giving it a lot of thought, and I don't think I could go with you anyway.
I see.
So I couldn't leave Bernice in the carnival. My sister says carny folk should stay with carny folk.
Your sister?
Bernice.
Oh. Arthur, why is Bernice so close-mouthed about Mr. Wilson? She acts as though she's afraid of him.
Us carny folks stick together, see? Like, we don't like other people sticking their noses into our business.
Bernice said that?
Yes.
Arthur, where is Mr. Wilson's trailer?
I don't know.
Oh, come now, Arthur.
Bernice says, you know...
I know. Bernice says too much.
I don't know anything, Agent Man. Well, I have to go practice my knife throwing now. I gotta practice every day, you know?
Well, it was clear Bernice had given Arthur his instructions, and no thanks to him, I finally found Wilson's trailer set off from the rest. Mr. Wilson? Mr. Wilson! The door to the trailer was unlocked, and it swung open at my knock. Wilson obviously wasn't there, but I didn't think he'd mind if I went in and waited. The inside of the trailer was dim and musty. I left the door open to let in what little sunlight the day had left and sat in the lone chair in front of the makeup table. I was just about to reach for a cigarette when I had the feeling that I wasn't alone. I turned slowly in the chair and the back of my neck began to crawl. There on a shabby army cot was Wilson's dummy, propped up against the wall. The steady, unchanging expression of its face with the staring eyes and painted smile grinned back at me. It was weird and uncomfortable to be so close to this lifeless thing, unmoving, wooden, that seemed so real and alive on the platform in the tent. I tried to ignore it, but I couldn't. I looked away, but I could still feel it there, grinning at me in the early evening dimness. When I could stand it no longer, I got up and walked out of the trailer and bumped right into Bernice.
What did I tell you, flesh peddler?
Bernice, I...
What were you doing in there?
Waiting. For Wilson.
What did I tell you?
Now look, Bernice. I don't like you or anyone else telling me what I can or can't do. I want to see Wilson again. I'm waiting here.
Come with me, please. I must talk to you privately in my trailer. Sit down.
Well, what's on your mind, Bernice?
I didn't really think you'd follow us.
I told you I'm not easily discouraged.
Mr. Harris, I must warn you again to leave now without seeing Wilson.
I don't think you understand me. I'm used to getting what I go after.
Mr. Harris.
I intend to see Wilson to try to talk him into signing a contract. And you've said so far, all that you've said is go away. Can you give me a good reason for not seeing him? Okay, then why did you insist on dragging me in here?
Mr. Harris, can you assure me your interest in Wilson does not go beyond signing him as a client?
What do you mean?
Your interest in Wilson wouldn't by chance be in his past, his private life, and not in his professional talent.
I never heard of him until I caught his act 3 days ago.
Mr. Harris, I'd hoped I wouldn't have to tell you this. I didn't realize you were so stubborn, but...
Yes.
Well, Alexander Wilson lost his mind many years ago. That doesn't disturb you.
It might if I believed you, Bernice.
What?
I don't think Wilson's nuts. Apparently something's bothering him. Something big, maybe, but it's not insanity.
I suppose you know Wilson better than I do.
I didn't say that. But a man in my business meets every kind of person there is. The cheats, the phonies, the right guys, the bums.
So?
So you develop an instinct about people. And my instinct tells me Wilson is not insane. You'll have to try something better to scare me off.
Mr. Harris, Wilson thinks he's a murderer.
You are trying to scare me, aren't you?
If that's necessary to protect you and us, yes.
You think he might murder me, too?
I don't mean that. Actually, he never murdered anyone.
Look, Bernice, you don't make sense.
Don't you understand?
No.
I said Alexander Wilson thinks he is a murderer. He thinks he murdered a woman a long time ago. He's lived with this thought for years, nourished it, until he really believes it. It's driven him out of his mind.
Bernice, do you expect me to believe a cockamamie story like that?
It's the truth. So don't you see? The only place for him is here, in the carnival, with his own kind. We understand
him. Well, hasn't anyone tried to help him, to make him realize
he is beyond that now. But with us, he's all right. Outsiders disturb him.
You haven't scared me off, Bernice.
You've got to stay away from him.
Why? If anything you've told me is true, it's only half the truth.
It's enough for you to know.
From you, maybe. Perhaps Wilson will tell me the rest.
I've warned you. I will not warn you again.
Oh, Bernice. Oh, hello again, Agent Man.
Hi, Arthur. How's your throwing arm?
Well,
Come in, Arthur. Mr. Harris is just leaving.
Yes. So long, Bernice.
Goodbye, Mr. Harris.
When the trailer door closed behind me, I guessed Bernice would start talking her fury out on Arthur. So I moved around to the small window in the back of the trailer to see if I could learn anything more.
I don't care. I don't even want you to say hello to him. Nothing. Understand?
Well, you know, just saying hello don't hurt, does it, Bernice?
I don't want you to open your mouth in front of that man, even to yawn. I had to lie to him to get him away from here. And I don't want you saying anything to bring him back.
All right, Bernice.
Just pray he goes back to his flesh peddling in New York on the first train.
Just as I thought, Bernice had lied to me. I was determined to get to the bottom of this double talk about Wilson more than ever. This had become more important to me than signing him to the usual 7-year management contract. When I got back to Wilson's trailer, there was a light inside.
Who's there?
It's Peter Harris again.
Who?
Peter Harris. I spoke to you a few days ago and...
What do you want?
I want to talk to you, Mr. Wilson.
Go away.
But I've come all the way from New York.
I must ask you to leave at once.
Look, Mr. Wilson, I'm not a detective. All I wanted when I first met you was to book you into the big time. But now there's something more. I think you need help. You need help badly.
No, you're mistaken.
Can I come in and talk to you?
Oh, good heavens, no.
Well, how about having a drink with me before the show? You look like you could use one.
Please, leave me alone.
Wilson. Wilson, don't you see what these people are doing to you? For some reason, you're a haunted man, and this carnival is the worst place in the world.
Leave me now. Leave me, please. These people are all the help I need. Leave me alone.
I'll be at the hotel overnight. If you change your mind, Wilson, call me. Now I was mad. If he wanted to rot there, going with the carnival until it wasted away, it was no business of mine. I had a few drinks in my room at the hotel. Phoned Gloria that I'd be home the next day. Went to bed.
Yes?
Mr. Harris?
Wilson.
Can you meet me right away?
Right away? What time is it? Well, I...
Please. I must talk to you. Can you meet me?
Sure. Okay, where are you calling from?
An all-night drugstore.
Well, where is it?
Wait, no. Not here. Meet me at my trailer.
Okay.
And please, hurry.
It took me longer to wake the cab driver in front of the hotel than it did to get to the carnival grounds. I told the cab to wait and made my way through the darkened tents and trailers to number 17.
Come in.
What's the matter?
Mr. Harris, I've changed my mind. I want to leave with you tonight.
But tonight? Well, what's the...
Mr. Harris, you're the first person outside of the carnival I've talked to in more than 2 years. You're the first person I've had the courage to approach...
Go on.
I trust you, Mr. Harris. I can't see why, but I know you'll believe me and help me. I can't live like this anymore.
Sure, sure. Now, just take it
easy. No. Listen to me. 2 years ago, I killed a woman. A beautiful woman. I loved her more than I've ever loved anything or anyone in my life. When I tried to tell her how much I loved her, she laughed at me. I couldn't stand that laugh.
I understand, Wilson. But that isn't exactly justification.
See, she and her son, she was divorced, were working in this very carnival when I first saw her back in my hometown in Illinois.
Yes.
I fell in love. Oh, you can call me a rube, anything, but I was in love. I quit my job and followed the carnival for months. That's how much I loved her. And she laughed at me. So I shot her one night. And then I wanted to die, too. And when I saw her lying there at my feet, I wanted them to hang me, but they laughed at me.
They laughed at you?
The law, the police, they didn't believe I'd done anything. They wouldn't let me give myself up.
Where did you get this crazy idea, Wilson?
It isn't a crazy idea. It's the truth.
Look, lots of people get lots of funny ideas. They think about something they want to do, and they think about it so much that they really believe they've done it.
It was real from the beginning. I killed her. I did. But there was no evidence against me.
Listen, Wilson, you're not making sense.
You listen. He destroyed every bit of evidence so he could punish me himself. The police couldn't arrest or even suspect me.
Who destroyed what evidence, Wilson?
Her son, Oliver.
Oliver?
Yes, Mr. Hurst. He's referring to me.
A trick? No. Wilson was too upset to be tricking me. I wheeled at the sound of his voice, and there in the doorway stood Wilson's dummy, Oliver, a small but capable pistol in his hand.
You are just as curious as Bernice said you were, Mr. Harris.
Oliver.
Bernice told me a lot about you. You had to know. And now you do.
No, you're not...
You shocked to learn I'm a midget. I must admit you gave me quite a start when you made yourself at home in the trailer this afternoon.
But that was...
That was me, Mr. Harris. Fortunately, I was already made up for the evening performance.
Mr. Harris hasn't done anything, Oliver. Let him go.
That depends on you. You see, Mr. Harris, Wilson is no ventriloquist. I guess that's obvious now.
It is.
Wilson murdered my mother, and I protected him from the police.
But why?
Why? So the law couldn't punish him. What satisfaction would there have been for me if they'd just hanged him? He'd been dead in an instant. Is that enough punishment for a man who has murdered your mother? No. He deserved more. And I've given it to him. I've punished Alexander Wilson for years.
Oh, that's right, Mr. Harris. He's held this over my head ever since. Sitting on my lap at every performance, reminding me, night and day, well, I've had as much as I can stand. So go ahead, Oliver. Shoot! Shoot!
Oliver, be sensible. If you pull that trigger, they're here.
They? Bernice and Arthur and everyone else? Bernice already knows, and now I don't care if the others do, too.
For heaven's sake, shoot me. Get it over with. Shoot me, you monster! Shoot me!
With horror frozen on his face, Wilson slid to the floor, dead. Then Oliver turned on me, the pupils of his eyes tiny with madness and his frail little body trembling.
I'm afraid this is one act you can't book, Mr. Harris.
Oliver.
You wanted to know everything.
Oliver, now wait.
I'm really sorry for your sake. He asked me to let you go, but under the circumstances.
No.
I'm sorry, Mr. Harris.
It flashed by my head and landed quivering in Oliver's chest. A long, gleaming knife blade. And there was Arthur in the doorway of the trailer with Bernice. His face like stone. Watching Oliver crumple the little distance to the floor. Slowly the faces of the others appeared in the doorway, silent. The terror I was holding back was a physical pain. I walked to the door and stood looking down at the little body lying awkwardly like a dummy now. A lifeless thing. Unmoving. Staring. Even with the traces of a painted smile grinning up at me.
This couldn't have gone on any longer, I suppose. The police will come now, and at last there'll be an end to it. Go home, flesh peddler, and forget all about us.
I went home, but I haven't forgotten, and I'm afraid I never will.
Suspense, in which DeForest Kelly starred in William N. Robeson's production of Flesh Peddler, written by Robert Duren. Listen. Listen again next week when we return with Pigeon in the Cage, starring Lloyd Bridges. Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. Supporting Mr. Kelly and Flesh Peddler were D.J. Thompson, Gretchen Connie, Dawes Butler, Howard McNear, and Dick Beals.
How are your brakes? Not the ones in your car. We're sure you keep those in tip-top working order. But how about your own brakes?
Are they in working shape? When you're behind the wheel of your car and you feel that impulse to challenge the legal speed limit, can you stop that impulse on a dime? When a less courteous driver does something downright stupid that may inconvenience you, are you likely to do something twice as foolish just to show him he can't push you around? Or can you say halt to your anger before it leads to an accident? Students of human behavior have discovered that most of the accidents on our highways are the result of emotional immaturity. An adult can control his feelings and concentrate on his goal. Don't let childish attitudes keep you from reaching your destination. When other drivers and traffic regulations annoy you, use the brakes in your head as quickly as you would the ones on your car. Remember, accidents don't have to happen. America listens most to the CBS Radio Network.
You have been listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web. You can subscribe at no charge through Apple Podcasts, Podbean, or RSS. And we're now on YouTube. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you can join us again next week for another hour of entertainment from the golden age of radio. Until then, this is your host, Justine Ward, saying so long for a while.